Welcome to The Fighting Priests, a podcast exploring orthodoxy and jiu-jitsu. Two paths, one struggle. Father Ted Perestivopoulos and Father Thomas Sandberg are two orthodox Christian priests who also happen to be practitioners of jiu-jitsu. Together, they explore how these two unique worlds intersect and what it means for our spirituality. Here's Father Ted and Father Thomas.
Welcome, everybody, back to The Fighting Priest. My name is Father Ted Perestivopoulos, and I'm here not with my co-host, Father Thomas Sandberg, who's usually with us, but he's currently a little bit on vacation up in Calgary, taking some much-needed time off and some rest in the mountains, doing his hiking, as everybody knows he likes to do, with his wife, Ashley, and his little daughter, Sophia. So I am flying solo today, but I'm very happy to have as my co-pilot on this on today's podcast, a good friend of mine. And I say a good friend because I've known this guest for quite a few years now from my time in Winnipeg. As many of you know, I used to be the priest at St. Demetrius Greek Orthodox Church in Winnipeg, Manitoba, which is, for our American friends, just north of North Dakota. That's how they can situate us in the prairies. And today I have with us Reverend Father Yuri Hladio, who is... His background is half Greek, half Ukrainian, right? Orthodox priest.
I got the best of both worlds, you know, half Greek, half Ukrainian.
Right. Yeah, half Greek, half Ukrainian, culturally speaking, married to Nikaila, Matushka Nikaila, who is also from Manitoba, who has a Canadian background, I guess you could say, right?
She's just a regular Canadian, born and bred Canadian. She grew up in a Mennonite context, but she became Orthodox just before we got married, 8 or 9 years ago now.
Yeah, I remember. I did the catechism.
Well, you were actually one of the conversations that we had with you. You know, me and Nikaila met with you, and it was a very formative conversation in terms of, you know, Nikaila coming into the church, and also just Nikaila coming to terms with dating an Orthodox person, right?
Yeah.
Because Orthodoxy is kind of weird to people who have never experienced it.
Yeah. And then there's you, which is like just another level.
Yeah. It's another area of weird, right? It's like double weird, right? Yeah, so, she was brave. She conquered some of those, questions and everything like that. So that's good.
Yeah. Of course she was. Yeah. So Father Yuri is a priest, in the OCA, which is the Orthodox Church in America, in Hamilton, Ontario. Which is, he's the rector of Saint Maria of Paris Orthodox Church, which is a small kind of mission parish. Yes, I think you've just...
Yeah. We got about average Sunday, we probably get 55, 60 people on an average Sunday. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I think you started you were the founding priest of that parish. Yes.
Yeah. So the parish was born. The community existed since 2016 as just an informal gathering of faithful. But then in May 2020, 2 months into the pandemic, they got a blessing from the Archbishop to be a mission parish. And then in August of that year, I was assigned as the priest in charge. So I've been there for a while now, and it's been a lot of fun. Working with the community to form an Orthodox church out of whatever COVID was, right? Sure. We never had a pre-COVID community, right?
Sure.
So it's all coming out of there. So it's, yeah, fascinating struggles and things like that.
Sure. And how many years have you been a priest now?
I was ordained a priest in August of 2019. So sure. four years or so.
Yeah.
So yes. Right, yeah. A year before. I was ordained a priest. I finished my education, my last year of schooling. I did my Master's of Divinity at Trinity College. Actually, you were one of my professors.
Yep.
And I graduated during like the pandemic, right? In like April of 2020 is when I graduated. So I really was actually quite, and I still am in many ways, quite an inexperienced priest. I never had the opportunity to serve kind of under another priest for a while. I did a bit as a deacon. I had to do a 6-month internship, but it was a big challenge, definitely, coming out of COVID and learning how to be a priest, not only learning how to be a priest in a church, but learning how to be a priest in a brand new mission. And not only that, learning how to be a priest in a brand new mission coming out of the COVID pandemic. So there were a lot of interesting challenges.
A ton of stuff in the last couple of years, right? And so just kind of like a recap, like I knew you when you were a lay person, right? A young lad growing up in Winnipeg.
Young buck, Yuri.
That's right. Your dad is Father Bogdan Hladio, who is now newly retired, but very much young and vibrant still. And and I met your father in Winnipeg when I went. He was the chancellor of the Ukrainian metropolis of Canada for a short time before he left and came back to Toronto. And then I was in Winnipeg. You obviously met you. We hung out. We were friends there. When I met Nikaila, when you met Nikaila. And then afterwards, I came back to Toronto. And then you guys slowly came over, you know, matriculated over to...
yeah, we did. Back to the promised land.
Yeah, that's right. Back to your parents and everything. And and then, of course, you became an Orthodox priest, which is awesome. Like you said, I had the privilege of being able to teach you a little bit at the master's program at Trinity College at U of T, University of Toronto. But what I didn't know, so like we've known each other for such a long time, and I had no clue, mind you, okay, it's fairly a fairly new experience for you, as I understand, new reality.
Very new, very new.
But who would have thought now, after all these years and knowing you so long, that you just told me a couple, it wasn't even a month ago. Oh, by the way, I do jiu-jitsu. I'm like, what?
I don't even think I told you. I think my dad told you.
Yeah, your dad told you. That's true. Your dad told me at a Vespers. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true.
And then I immediately got a text from you that night. So,
of course. Yeah, it's like, what do you, because, you know, jiu-jitsu guys were like, we're like a crack addicts, you know. It's like calling the dealer right away. Oh, I heard you're into this. You only want to talk about it.
Exactly. Yeah, you can get pretty nerdy, I think.
yeah, it's true. So this is why you're on the podcast, because this is kind of like we joke with Father Thomas that, you know, we've interviewed other Orthodox priests who do jiu-jitsu in the past, of course, in the last 3 years of doing this podcast, but no other ones here in Canada. So you're the other. It's like, you're like the dodo bird, you know, like we thought
we got the trifecta now.
Yeah, it's true. The triad or the trinity, one could say. Maybe in the future there'll be more, which would be nice,
hopefully.
Yeah, that would be nice. There are other Orthodox, of course, lots of Orthodox Christians who do it, but no other priest that I knew of. So I'm very excited that you are coming into the fold. And really excited. So tell me a little bit, like, so we got a little bit about your kind of a little bit about your background. You know, you are a PK, a priest kid as well. Your dad's Ukrainian, your mom's Greek. Is your mom fully Greek or partly Greek?
Partly Greek. Yeah.
Partly Greek.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So she's trilingual growing up. English, Ukrainian, Greek was she had that from childhood. My dad had to teach himself.
Sure.
But both of them are trilingual, and sure. Unfortunately, I didn't get quite the Greek. I did get the Ukrainian though, but okay. I only know a little bit of kitchen Greek.
That's okay. That's all you need. So how did you, so you started the mission parish in the middle of a pandemic. We started this podcast in the middle of the pandemic. I started jiu-jitsu like literally 5 months before the lockdowns happened. So only Father Thomas is like, OG, you know, he started back when he was baptized, actually 2011, when I baptized him in Winnipeg. As an Orthodox Christian, that was the year he also started jiu-jitsu. So he's 13 years now going on. He's already a first degree black belt. How did you tell me, like, how did you get into it? Like, how did you discover it?
Well, I'm going to go a bit further back, and because I was actually reflecting on this earlier, how do I explain why? Cause people at, you know, people that I've met doing jiu-jitsu are like, oh, why have you come? And I didn't really have a clear answer for them. Right. Now I feel like I have a little bit of a clear answer, but basically, like, when I growing up, I played football, right? Like, I played a contact sport. And I enjoyed it. There's a team aspect to it. There's a physical aspect to it. Accomplishing something physically was something that I enjoyed. But then I moved to Winnipeg, and I was about 15 years old, between grade 10 and 11, when my dad became the chancellor, and we moved to Winnipeg. And then the group of friends I got connected with were like the more artsy people. So I started playing in bands and performing in theater, right? So that was my outlet. And I sort of left behind the sports and the physicality part of it. So then I did that for like over a decade, 15 years. I performed, I did improv professionally for a few years in Winnipeg, which has a wonderful local arts scene. And then I came back to Ontario. I did my master's, got ordained and everything like that. And in certain ways, actually, being an Orthodox priest brings together a lot of the skills that you might use in a theater performance, right? You have to know how to project properly. You have to know how to speak in front of people. You have to know how to move, right? You have to know how to, if you're preaching, you can see the faces of the people that you're preaching to, and you can actually read the room, and you can adjust as you go, and things like that. If somebody gives you a confused look after you said something, well, maybe you're going to clarify that point before you move on, right? So sure. All of those skills, I really enjoy the priesthood because it encapsulates a lot of these skills. But one thing that I always thought I wanted to do was something like chaplaincy, right? I thought about hospital chaplaincy or military chaplaincy, but I wanted to be a parish priest first and foremost. And then I found out that if you join the reserves, the Canadian reserves, you can actually keep your civilian job and work locally, like part-time. So sure. I joined the reserves. So I'm a military chaplain as well. And the reason I bring that up is because last summer, last September, I went to basic training and in Saint-Jean, Quebec. And what that instilled in me was an appreciation again for the physicality of like the human experience, right? Yes. You're doing drill, which is that ceremonial dance that the military people do, right? Where they drill, they march, they do all that. You're doing the push-ups, you're sleeping on the ground, you're climbing through brambles and woods and things like that. And
3 years of Army cadets, my friend.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Camp Borden. 2 summers in a
row.
Oh
yeah. Okay.
Another drill.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So it kind of brought me back to my younger days of doing physical, accomplishing something physical. And then when I came back, I was so in shape, right? I was so in shape. I probably lost 25 pounds and got muscle and everything like that. And so what happened was I thought, well, okay, now I can relax for a bit. And October, November, Christmas rolls around. And I gained a whole lot of weight back. I wasn't exercising. I took my break a little too seriously, and and I missed that sort of physical aspect of it. So and the health aspect of it. So I found out that there was a jiu-jitsu place really close, about 7-minute walk from where I live, and the it has a good reputation. The coach there has a very good reputation, and I just walked in and started doing jiu-jitsu. And that was probably in just after Pascha this year, so mid-April. And then I started officially in May. So it's been May, June, July. So 3 months. I'm very fresh. I'm still, I can kind of understand the directions that they're giving now and the terminology, but there's still a lot that I'm very fresh, very, you know, somebody will say, oh, I'm working on this today. And I'm like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a time where I couldn't even explain to the other person what I was I knew what I was trying to work on, but I didn't know what the words were to call what I was working on. So, yep, still very fresh, but I'm feeling actually a little bit of improvement now, which is good. Being able to get out of certain situations or escapes or things like that. So, yeah, that's.
Do they have a beginner's class?
Like, yeah, so they
class.
Yeah, so they have a beginner's class that you have to do. Well, you don't have to, but it's you have. They say like doing like 4 to 6 of these classes will get you to a place where you could competently participate in like a class with everybody. And then they of course have classes for higher ranks and things like that.
Sure.
But yeah, I go usually in the afternoons. Like they have afternoon classes and evening classes. The afternoon classes are much lower key, a lot fewer people. So there's, you know, in an afternoon class, a busy class might see 15, maybe 20 people. But it's usually about 10 to 13 people, which is a great number. Once you pair off it, you have lots of room and a lot of one-on-one instruction as well from the coach.
Yeah, that's how I started too. My very first class was a lunchtime class on Fridays at 12:30. So I remember going there because I was terrified, right? I was terrified, overweight, not feeling good. And it was just like, and it was still horrible, but it was a small class, maybe 10, 15 people. And it was less intimidating than going to like an evening class, like prime time where everybody's there, right? When you have like 30, 40 people on the mats, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I found the first couple of times I went, even the intro classes, well, first of all, they were shorter, right? They're only like 45 minutes long and I would leave being like so sore and so tired. And I'm like, how am I possibly going to stretch this to an hour or more of doing this kind of thing? And the answer is, well, if you just keep coming, your cardio will get better. You'll be able to last longer, basically. But I remember like, when you don't really know what you're doing, you're going to injure yourself pretty easily. And you know, the panic that comes over you when someone's on top of you and there's nothing you can do about it and you don't have any skills at all to deal with it. You just sort of panic and flail and you don't breathe. And so just the ability to sort of slow down, and just be in the moment work on that one thing that you know you need to work on. And it's helpful to know that the person you're rolling with has your back as well, right? There's a really good camaraderie at this place. So,
oh yeah, like becoming comfortable with being uncomfortable. A lot of people say in the jiu-jitsu community, it's such an important skill set to have in life. You know, just to be calm under stress and pressure, which is it's a great skill for a priest to have too.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is something that from my past, like performing improv theater. We would perform, the group that I was in, there were six of us, we'd perform a improvised one-act play, right? So that's 45 minutes. It's one story. So you got to keep in mind all of these narrative beats, and you're the same character for 45 minutes. It's not Whose Line Is It Anywhere, where you just say a funny line and then you're a new character. So you got to be really on the ball. And what it teaches you, like the worst thing you can do is to start like thinking too far ahead. Right. Or start like what you need to do is really focus in on the moment, because if you're not listening to your partner, then you're not going to be actually excelling and making a good story. And I found the similar and there's this sense of being in the moment when you're on stage doing improv, right? Like you're in the moment, at least when you're doing it well. When you're not doing it well and you become very self-conscious, that's a bad thing, right? But when you're doing it well, you're not even aware of yourself. You're just performing. You're in that mode. And I feel I've had little hints of that in jiu-jitsu here and there. And I feel like that might happen more and more as I become a bit more competent in certain skills of just being able to be in the moment, right? And just let my body do what it's trained to do. And
yeah, you can't think too much. Like in jiu-jitsu, it moves the way, like as time goes on, like what do I know? I'm a blue belt. I'm coming up to almost 4 years, right? It goes, but you do it so much that, yeah, it becomes like a second nature. And then you don't have time to think when somebody is trying to strangle you. Right.
Right.
But things do slow down when you're calm, like, you know, time, mm-hmm. obviously our perception of time changes depending on our emotional state. Right. But yeah, you can't sit there and plan in jiu-jitsu, and I'm sure you're seeing this now, but you're going to see it in the future. As you add more tools to your tool belt, like the more techniques you learn, and slowly you begin to kind of string things together. Like right now, you're very new, like you said, 3 months. It's like you're basically learning how to fall properly. You're learning how to do a basic escape. You're learning how to keep your arms in so you don't get hurt. You're learning, you know, the basics, and you're just doing that. And usually for about a year, that's what it is. For a year, it's like in jiu-jitsu, generally speaking, not for everybody, but as a generalization, for a year, you're just trying to survive. Like if you can get to the point where you don't get submitted, you just survive, then you're doing well. That's like very good progress, right? And then later, like the second year, you start, you know, stringing together attacks and reversals and things like that. But you start doing them just automatically. So it's the same. It's very much like improv. I've never done improv. I've done a little bit of drama and things like that in high school and things like that, but never like complete improv. But it is very much being in the moment. You have to be present.
And listening,
yes,
right. I listened to one of the latest episodes of the Fighting Priest, and you talked about the idea of you should be able to be like blindfolded,
yes,
and rolling, right? Because it's your body's interaction with your opponent's body,
yes,
right? And you should be able to feel that. And there's, I mean, that's really similar to what's happening on stage. Like you need to be outrageously aware of the other person's cues, right? And that's what makes a good story. And I think the same thing, the same dynamic is at play when you're rolling with somebody, that you need to have the same amount of awareness of what they're doing, or a presence with them. Yeah.
How do you feel? So like when it comes to kind of, okay, you're an Orthodox priest now, and now you've entered into this kind of realm of it's a combat sport, right? It is a martial art. Now it's very different from what people think when they hear martial arts. Obviously it's not kung fu, it's not taekwondo, it's not karate, it's not chi, it's not any of that stuff like most people think, but it is a combat sport. And so this is a question that obviously we've grappled we've grappled with in this podcast multiple times in the past, but like and something that you brought up kind of in our discussions leading up about this idea of finding this balance between strength and weakness, right? Or, you know,
right.
You know, how do we and not to say that being a spiritual person or being a religious person is weak, because this I think is a misconception as well, right? But sorry, I'm not, I used the wrong word actually. It's not strength and weakness, but strength and humility. Sorry. It could be a Freudian slip there, because you know, this people associate humility with weakness.
Right.
That's where I was going with that. So I'm sorry about that. But you know, this idea that if you're humble, then you're kind of weak.
Then you let yourself get walked over.
Yeah. You're a pacifist. You would never, ever defend yourself. You know, if, and it's, and there is this kind of like, perception of Christians or of religious people that humility equals weakness, and then maybe, you know, strength might also be coupled with aggressiveness, violence, you know, ego, things like that. So like, how are you like kind of like dealing with this kind of dichotomy? Or maybe it's not a dichotomy for you, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, there's a few, there's two things that are coming up in my head right now. I'm going to start with where we should always start, which is with Christ, right? When you look at Christ, he's on trial in front of Pontius Pilate, or amidst the Sanhedrin, the council that has brought him to trial. And he's quiet a lot of the time, but he's, and he seems to be in a position of low status, right? And then now we're going to like improv talk here, right? The different characters in a scene, right? Who's got the low status? Who's got the high status, right? But he seems to be a character that has a low status in that situation, but actually he is the most high status in that situation. And being completely humble, he says exactly what needs to be said at exactly the right moments, right? And he knows exactly what he's doing, and it's calculated, and it's because he's prepared, and it's because he's fasted, and it's because he's prayed, right? He is, I mean, he's the God man. He's the person who can perfectly and dispassionately face that situation and basically back the authorities into a corner that they know he's innocent, but they still want to do away with him, right? Sure. And so he's able to, the thing is with the example of Christ is there is no example of him fighting and like wrestling or something like that, right?
There's one.
Go ahead.
They're not fighting, but there is an example of what one could say violence, which is the cleansing of the temple, right?
And that's
he makes
true.
He makes a whip of cords.
Yeah.
And he drives out, like literally. And when we say drive out, you know, okay, all the scripture says is that he made a whip of cords and drove people out, but it's assumed, it's implied that you're using the whip of cords to do something, right?
Yeah.
And you're overturning the money changers thing, and you're driving the people out and things like that. And you, and the only time that people, I guess you could say, saw anger or righteous indignation, right?
Right. And I think the important thing to say is that we would have to say that it was a dispassionate anger, right?
Sure. Yeah, of course.
One thing that I think doing something like jiu-jitsu would be is useful for is like if I'm in a situation in the real world and somebody is being antagonistic, maybe they're drunk or they're having some kind of mental health episode or something like that. And I find myself in a physical altercation, maybe they're coming at me or something like that, right? What if I don't have the physical knowledge, right? Just like the rehearsal of my body to what to do in that situation, then what's going to happen is my emotions are going to arise. And yes, it's going to be very difficult not to react out of a passionate place, and it's going to be very easy to allow the unrighteous anger or unrighteous violence sort of come out. But I think if you've trained and practiced it in a safe and controlled environment, then when a real life situation happens, what you can do is engage with that situation. And I'm not saying that everybody does this perfectly, but this is what I've never faced this kind of situation, but I would like to imagine that what the rehearsal and the training in a safe space would allow me to do is engage with a dangerous situation and perhaps a violent situation dispassionately. Yes. That there's no hatred towards the person. There's no animosity towards the person. There's no even wish to do them harm, right? It's, I need to subdue you now because you just need a timeout, right?
It's a lesser of two evils. Yes, of course. Like sometimes you have to do what you got to do to protect the innocent or the vulnerable. But dispassionately, like you're not doing it out of malice,
right? Like you should be able to do it calmly, right? Yes. Just completely calmly. This is not a big deal. this person just needs to cool down for a little bit. And but if you don't have, if you've never rehearsed that, right? Like training in jiu-jitsu construed as rehearsal, right? If you've never done that, you've never rehearsed your emotions. You've never allowed, you've never given yourself the opportunity to experience those kind of emotions, which mm-hmm. means that when real life situations happen, you don't know how you're going to react.
100%.
And
I would say jiu-jitsu is even one step further, because jiu-jitsu is the only martial art that exists right now where you can go 100% in rolling and still tap. Okay. Mm. Every other martial art, like for example, look at karate, taekwondo, they wear pads when they spar. You can't go 100% or you'll hurt the person, right? You know, because it involves striking, right? You're not going to try to literally kick the person's head off, right? As hard as you can, because then there's a great danger, right? But in jiu-jitsu, the nature of the grappling experience, right? That you can go like pretty hard. You can go almost 100% and know that you're actually like, you're going as hard as you can. But then you can also stop it, because the rules of the game is you tap and it's over, and there's great trust with the partner, but it is a more realistic as you could get, in my opinion, to combat than any other martial art, unless you're like training MMA and you're actually sparring in a ring. Okay, fine. But I mean, beyond that, you're going hard. And so it is really, really beneficial as a rehearsal, but even to the point where it's almost as real as it could get.
Right.
And that's why you can be dispassionate about it.
What's fascinating is that there have been situations in which I've been training with, you know, there's a couple of people I've made friends at the place, and we know each other, and we're getting to know each other through training. And like, sometimes your partner might be working on a choke or something like that. And then you kind of have to allow them to sort of get to experiment with it. And then I have to be getting choked. Right. And then you say, actually, like, that was probably like that. It could have been a lot worse. Like, you didn't do it as, you know, if you do this or that, that would have been good. Oh, no, I'm tapping out on that one. You got it. That's it. Right. Do that again. Right. So it's quite physical in, like, sometimes you're literally getting choked. But it's in the context. I like that word rehearsal, right? It's in that context, but it's so intense. It's like rehearsal, except you're also going 100%, mm-hmm. right? It's like doing a dress rehearsal every single time.
And it's just kind of getting back to what we're, you know, this idea of this balance between strength and humility. It seems that everybody today focuses on the humility aspect, right? And even when they look at the life of Christ, right? Like, because he is humble, he is controlled, he is meek, right?
But like, he's also in control of the situation.
Yes. Well, we did a whole episode on meekness. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you heard that one, but like in the past, we did one on Blessed are the Meek, right? Mm-hmm. And we would discuss with Father Thomas about this, about how the word meek does not mean weak.
Right.
Meek means dangerous, but you choose not to use your power, right? Like, so,
right.
You know, there's a reason why in the Beatitudes it says, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Why would you want the meek? Because you want your rulers to be meek. Yeah. You want the ones with power, with real power, right? You want the king or whoever it is who's in charge to have the ability to do violence, to have to have strength, to have abilities, to have to be a good strategist in war, to have all these abilities, but to be measured in their approach and their application of such power, right?
And you can't be measured unless you stretch yourself. You can't be measured unless you put yourself in situations that you normally aren't in.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
If the most physical thing you do in terms of physical altercation is maybe like shove around with your brother or something, you know, every couple months, then when a real situation comes up, you are not going to, you're not going to be able to be meek in that situation. You're going to be weak in that, weak in the worst sense in that situation. So you have to develop your sense of, I mean, if we're talking strictly about kind of physicality here, your sense of physicality, so that you know you can't measure it out unless you know how high you can go or how low you can go, right?
100%. Yeah. And this is why time and time again, we see that, you know, people who are practitioners of martial arts, generally speaking, and people who are practitioners of generally any of the fields of, like, for example, law enforcement, right? Martial arts, other sports, boxing, things like that. Those are the ones who are the most in control when there are altercations. And the people who are really dangerous are the ones who are untrained. Because the people who are untrained, like you said, their emotions get the best of them. They're unpredictable. They do things without thinking, right? So, like, for example, like in jiu-jitsu, you learn, okay, like at least in basic kind of like Gracie, self-defensive stuff, right? It's like somebody, if you're on concrete, you know, outside in a parking lot and somebody comes at you, well, you're probably not going to pull guard because you can pull guard in a competition because you have mats. So you pull guard and you fall back, but you're not going to pull guard when there's pavement and hurt your head and bash your head open, things like that. And also, if you know jiu-jitsu or if you're trained in one of those martial arts, you're going to be cognizant of the fact that you're not just going to grab a guy and throw them down and bash the head against the pavement, because A, you'll kill them. Second of all, you'll go to jail for manslaughter, right? Exactly. So there's techniques to more, not, I get safely, but not 100% safely, but much more safely take somebody down, to be able to, you know, subdue them in ways that are not going to be detrimental. Now, a person who doesn't know these things, who's just flailing and running at you like a crazy person, right? Whether they're in their right mind or not, right? Is more dangerous because they don't see ahead, you know.
Well, it's like minimum necessary force, right? If you don't know what necessary force is,
yeah,
then how can you determine what minimum would be in that, right? So you need to rehearse like a lot of force, right? Like you're going 100% when you're rolling, but yeah we're on the same page here.
I like a lot of, you know, there are a lot of Orthodox who don't like martial arts, and there are even like whole churches and jurisdictions that kind of condemn them wholesale without kind of looking into. I remember we had spoken with Father Thomas in one of our earlier episodes about how, I think it was like 15 years ago or maybe 10 years ago, there was a metropolis in Greece, in Glyfada, which is near, in Athens, one of the metropolises, you know, that they were starting to teach jiu-jitsu as part of the gym curriculum in the high schools, which I think is a wonderful thing, just for physical education and for self-defense, things like that. And the metropolis Glyfada had issued a letter, which was a very kind of ignorant letter. I'm not trying to criticize the church, but it was a very ignorant letter saying, oh, you know, this is Far Eastern religion and it's going to corrupt our youth and all this kind of stuff. And okay, maybe if it was another martial art, right? But this is not what it is. Mm-hmm. And they were you could tell they were completely ignorant. They had never even looked into what jiu-jitsu is. And they condemned it as if it was like the antithesis of Orthodox living. And it's like, Well, I remember like what St. Nectarius, like, you know, St. Nectarius had a very famous quote. And, you know, did you happen to see that movie about St. Nectarius, Men of God, that came out?
No, I haven't.
So you can see it for free on YouTube now. It's released. It was a really good, it was a pretty good movie, I thought. It was well done. It came out last year. It was limited release, so obviously, those kind of things. It's the life of St. Nectarius of Aegina, right? And there's a quote in the movie, but it's actually from his life. It's not made up, where, you know, he was persecuted his whole life. You know, he was persecuted. He was a very holy man. People were jealous of him. You know, he was in Alexandria in Egypt. You know, they were, the powers that be at that time didn't want him to be patriarch because he was going to give all the money of the church to the poor, right? And so they kicked him out of there, and then he was hounded all the way to Greece, and he couldn't get work. And here's a bishop who couldn't get work, and he was like starving, and he was always persecuted. But then when he started, when he got the blessing, and he started a female monastery in Aegina, on the island of Aegina.
I've been there.
Yeah, you know, and they built it up, and then so he was always quiet. He was always turning the other cheek, but when the church at that time and the authorities went after the monastery, like for the land, for the money, all this kind of stuff, because they want to control it, he fought back, right? And he wouldn't allow them. And so one of his, you know, kind of longtime students and kind of spiritual son said, you know, I don't understand your grace. He goes, you know, like, you've been trampled on so many times. You're always, you know, never saying a word, never speaking up for yourself, always, you know, taking all this abuse all these years, but now you're going to go against the Holy Synod when it comes to the monastery. And his response was, and it's relevant to our conversation, he says, well, he goes, when they come after you, you turn the other cheek. When they come after your children, you fight. Right? Mm-hmm. And the reason why I think he says this is because my personal interpretation is that, well, it's one thing to kind of turn the other cheek when you are making a decision for yourself, you know, your own autonomy, you have your own free will, and it may be the time and place to either sacrifice yourself, right? Be a martyr or make a point. You can do that because you have free will to do that. But when it comes to the protection of others under your care, like your children, your wife, your husband, you're mm-hmm. a father now, right? Mm-hmm. Or your parishioners or anybody else who's under your care who are innocent, who are weaker than you, who are vulnerable, right? Then that's a different story because you are not there to make the decision for them, right? You are there to protect the innocent against those who would harm. And yes, of course, without malice, without anger, but we live in a difficult world. We live in a dangerous world. We live in a fallen world. And yes, unfortunately, sometimes there is the lesser of two evils, I guess you could say, right? This is why we have.
Yeah. Well, it's like, it's like, you know, if I see a little girl crossing the street and a car is coming, like speeding in really fast, and I run and I shove the girl as hard as I can out of the way, I'm committing an act of violence.
Yes.
But it's a good thing. Like,
yes.
You know, violence is not that, not that easy to parse out. And to go back to our point, like I think if you don't train, then you aren't equipped to measure out an appropriate amount of violence for the situation, the minimal amount of violence to subdue a situation. And what you said reminds me, the story about St. Nectarios reminds me of something that Father Hopko shared in a podcast. No, maybe it was a talk that he did a long time ago, but he talked about, you know, bread for me is a material problem. Bread for my brother is a spiritual problem. Right. Mm-hmm. Like you have, as things pertain to you, you have a choice. Like if somebody comes and attacks me and there's no one else around or whatever, that is a different kind of situation than if mm-hmm. somebody comes and attacks somebody that's next to me.
Sure.
But yeah.
And I would say, I would go one step further and say that even if nobody's around, let's say, you and somebody else, right? You're alone in the street and somebody attacks you, right? Again, there is a choice there and there is a spiritual choice as well on whether there is, whether you have an obligation to protect yourself or not. Why? Because
right.
if we look at the lives of the saints and especially the lives of the martyrs, they're not dying indiscriminately. They're mm-hmm. not dying because the only time martyrs voluntarily die is because it's for the sake of the gospel,
mm-hmm.
right? Not for the sake of just, well, someone's going to kill me.
Right.
And so let them kill me for no apparent reason.
Or like they're not seeking it out or things like
they're
that.
They're not seeking it out. And they're also not allowing it only for the sake of being a pacifist. This is, a misunderstanding. People see, they say, well, you know, the martyrs, if a holy person would never fight back. It's like, I'm not fully convinced of that because always the word martyr is witness, right? So you want to witness Christ to the world, right? You want to witness to your faith. And so, yes, that might involve being killed by somebody if your death will bring them salvation, right?
Well, it's the story of Saint Moses the Ethiopian who gets ransacked by brigands and things like that. And he wrestles them into submission.
Yes.
And that's actually what leads them to Christ. Right.
Yes.
So there's a story codified within our tradition of somebody who subdues people so that they can come to Christ. Right. And he's protecting them against doing more evil to themselves. Right. Because
yes.
he doesn't care about his stuff. It's not that they're going to steal his stuff that he's worried about. It's that their souls are in danger by stealing. Right. They are destroying themselves through the acts of violence that they commit.
Yes. Well, that's a great point. And to kind of add to that and circle around, what I was getting to is that if somebody attacks me, for example, I'm alone in the street, I have two obligations the way I see it. Number one is like an indiscriminate person just shows up. Let's say they want to rob me or maybe they're not well and they attack me violently because they want to kill me. Right. And I don't know this person, let's say. Right. Well, I have an obligation to protect myself. Why? Because I am a creation of God. So the protection of life to a certain degree is paramount, including my own life. Second of all, if I'm trained, for example, in jiu-jitsu, and I am able to stop this person by subduing them without hurting them or killing them, right? And also stopping them from committing murder. So mm-hmm. not only am I saving myself, which is a win-win, right? mm-hmm. But I'm also stopping them and subduing them and hopefully until help can come, or, you know, police can come, authorities can come, and being able to help them so that they don't commit something worse, right? And so I think that's better than just saying, well, okay, I'm a pacifist, kill me now. And then, okay, let's say you die, right? And then that person goes to jail for murder and they don't learn anything, right? So right. It's much more complex. I think than most people kind of just, you know, a lot of people flippantly just say, you know, oh, you know, we're, I'm a Christian, I'm a pacifist. Should never hurt anybody. Like, okay, no, I try not to hurt anybody. But when you're set in certain situations, it would be good to be prepared, right?
You have been listening to The Fighting Priests. Feel free to download us on Spotify, Apple iTunes, or anywhere else you get your content. Check us out on Instagram at The Fighting Priests. And if you have any questions, feel free to email us at thefightingpriests@gmail.com. Till next time, keep training the body and the soul.